Chapter 44. The Weeper. She woke late the next morning, the sun already high enough to burn away the canyon mist. Reluctantly, she pulled herself away from Jen's warmth and sat up. All at once, she felt sick, not daring to look at the peaceful face of her protector, for fear doing so would crumble her resolve. After rinsing her own face in the chill water of the river, she walked along the bank, preparing herself emotionally for the loneliness she had committed to pull on top of herself. Thinking of Fenner smiling at Jen's return helped steel her, and at last she crossed back to where he slept. Incanting softly, she put her face close to his and inhaled deeply, stepping back as his eyes fluttered and opened. He jumped to his feet in confusion, staring at the sky for several moments before settling his gaze upon the chalane. She braced herself. Jen regarded her, face troubled. "What have you done?"
"I made you sleep, as I said I would," she answered coldly. "You needed it, so don't bother offering a protest. Let's eat and leave."
Her tone took him back, and expectedly he controlled his face into a stony mask of indifference. "I don't suppose you stayed awake to watch," he inquired, voice empty.
"Does it matter? We're alive. But you've been watching, haven't you?"
She was thankful for his irritable mood. It simplified what she needed to do. "What?" he returned flatly.
"I'll show you what I mean. Give me your knife."
The perplexity only showed in his eyes as he removed his knife from his boot and handed it to her.
"Now hold out your arm."
As he did, the chalane slashed it deeply, blood dripping onto the stones. He didn't blink or even grimace at the wound, a feat that still unnerved her. She removed her veil.
"Now look at me."
As he did, she returned the gaze unblinkingly while his blood painted the stones at their feet. How she wanted to see his eyes smile again, to see them soften with kindness or flare with delight when he saw her. Ruthlessly, she shoved down her wand and put forth her hand and touched his skin. The flaps of the wound knit together instantly. "What was that supposed to prove?" he questioned. "We both know you are a powerful healer."
"I didn't try to heal you, Jen. You just healed. Remember when you told me that I'd healed you in the carriage and I had no memory of doing so? That's because I did nothing to heal you. If I touch you, you are healed."
"Interesting. What does it have to do with me watching you, and why does it anger you?" The chalane replaced her veil and swallowed hard.
"You know the prophecy well. Do you remember the part about the chalane and the Ha'ulric walking hand in hand?"
"Yes."
"Recite it then."
"And upon the field of death they shall walk hand in hand, and about them the fire of war shall burn, and about them the arrows fall, and around them the blades cut, and around them demons rage. But he bears no burn, no wound. From his heart to her hand is love. From her heart to his hand is healing. Without will, without spell, without sacrifice, hand in hand, strength for strength."
"Stop."
She waited as he thought.
"From the earliest chalane to me, woman to woman was past the mystery, Jen. He that loves the chalane suffers no wound if he stands with our touch. Hand in hand, I am to walk onto the field of death with the Ha'ulric, and in my hand will be the healing that will keep him alive when the armies of Mikik wage war upon us."
"Then Shaitan is a dead man. He loves you not."
"But you love me, Jen."
It took every ounce of effort to sound disappointed.
"I couldn't heal you like that if you didn't."
"So? I think everyone who knows you well loves you." She could sense the turmoil building in his mind, his confusion.
"No, Jen, not in the way you do. I cannot heal Jaren, Dayson, or anyone as I can heal you now. You love me as a man loves a woman. You kept watch over me, desiring me. I thought you wanted me to wear the veil for your reputation's sake. Now I realize that you just felt guilty for loving me, felt guilty for looking at me like a man looks on a woman he wants."
His face flamed red with shame and embarrassment, and the chalane felt guilty and sick for dredging up an emotion in him he could not suppress. But however cruel, she could leave no thread uncut.
"And you should feel ashamed. What of poor Fenner? She's the best friend I have, and you've betrayed her and fallen in love with another woman. At least Chertan doesn't try to pretend he loves me. Do you think Fenner will believe it when you pretend to love her? I'm saddened that you could do this to her. I suppose I should have known. The same thing was happening with Dayson before you replaced him. Dayson was falling in love with me, and when I am being truthful with myself, I must admit I loved him too. He is a handsome, noble man, but if I could not love him or let him love me, I certainly would not love you. Not that way. You've been a good, loyal friend, Chen, but you've let your discipline slip, and in doing so have hurt Fenner and made me doubt your heart, which I once thought to be true. He was broken, face ashen. Please, Chen pleaded. I apologize for my folly. I will be true, and you must believe, Alumira, that I would have never done anything to dissuade you from your marriage and your duty. I swear it. I know you couldn't love me in that way. I would never have asked you to love me in return. If it weren't for the healing, you would have never known. I'm not sure I would have known either. It's been so natural and gradual, so easy. Just let me do my duty. That's all I ask. I never wanted to hurt you. The Shalane couldn't speak for several moments. Grateful the veil hid the emotion on her face. I will do as you ask, unless I see that what you say isn't true. I will help you, though. You must never call me Alumira again, or act familiar with me as you have done. Since I know you feel more than friendship for me, those things are no longer appropriate. Yes, my lady, he said with a slight bow. I am truly sorry, and I thank you for your forbearance and mercy. I will not fail you.
Then lead on.
The Shalane observed Jen closely as he surveyed their situation, trying to fathom what he felt. But he returned his face to the cold, meaningless demeanour he had once worn without reprieve. As they clambered their way down the side of the waterfall and searched for a place to cross the pool, his silence and his reluctance to even take her hand to help her in difficult places let her know she hit the mark she intended. Thinking on how hypocritical, false, and undeserved her words had been, set her self-loathing to roiling. By nature, she sought to heal others, and she worked hard to convince herself that she was about that business for Fenner and for him. At the far end of the pool, a slender bridge spanned the river, the roar of the waterfall to their right drowning out every other noise. The quick-moving water converged at a narrow notch in the canyon wall, the constriction choking and foaming the water as it rushed over to plummet hundreds of feet to a narrow rapid below. A cool mist added to the morning chill, rising into the air from the troubled water and dampening their clothes as they traversed the delicate structure. The bridge terminated in a narrow path, led by the gazebos they had spotted the day before, each beautiful and unique, carved with figures of elves, beasts, and intricate symbols the Shalane had never heard of or seen. Jen passed them all without comment, heading directly for the cave entrance as if nothing else existed. Every step toward that black hole brought a deeper sadness into the Shalane's heart. There was no evidence of the birds that had sung so loudly the night before, and what the light of the fireflies had transformed into something so lively now lay dead, dreary, and lifeless.
"We'll need to find something to light our way once we enter the cave, Jen," the Shalane advised.
He answered nothing, but instead went to the entrance and stared into the darkness, as if waiting for something. A faint, cool breeze blew out of the cave, smelling musty. A feeling, an almost palpable sadness, seeped from the entrance and discouraged entry. The cave was not really a cave, but a finely carved hall, still in perfect condition, if dusty.
"Jen?"
she asked after a long pause. He raised a finger, indicating for her to wait. She squinted into the dark, listening. When she discerned a small light coming toward them, followed by another, and then more. The fireflies. A clump of them hovered in a sphere ahead of them, casting a yellow glow to push back the darkness. As they walked forward into the gloomy hall, the fireflies stayed just ahead of them, providing ample light to travel by.
"You knew about them,"
the Shalane commented, trying to force some conversation.
"I saw them last night, lighting the water in the gazebos. It was beautiful. How did you know?"
"Just a memory, Your Highness." The Shalane gritted her teeth at his lifeless tone. Each word was a corpse pulled from its grave.
The hallway sloped down for nearly a mile before levelling out and widening. The floor was made up of small square pieces of glazed marble set into patterns and shapes, some she recognised as runes. Others were crafted into elaborate scenes of nature, people, and war. At long intervals, the right side of the hallway would open to the outside, revealing striking views of the river and the canyon. As much as she wanted to stop and look, she didn't dare ask Jen to delay. She knew what he would say. He pressed forward, unheeding of anything around them, focused on getting out of the canyon and nothing else. Again, the hallway sloped down and into darkness, the natural light from the windows fading behind them. Alcoves carved into the hallway offered convenient places to stop, and after what the Shalane thought had been an hour, she asked Jen to halt their march so she could rest. He acquiesced, and she sat on a comfortable bench carved into the wall itself within a recessed arch. Rather than sit beside her, Jen stood at attention in front of her, face stony and cold in the weak light. The Shalane half considered undoing what she'd done, confessing what she felt and accepting the blame for leading him on. "We should go, milady," Jen's voice startled her. "This place has an air of sadness to it, and we would do well to get out quickly."
"I feel it too."
They walked more swiftly now, a sudden urgency spurring them on as an unnatural veil of melancholy enveloped them. The hallway, once flawless, started to reveal pale moss, cracks, and small pools of water. The Shalane wrinkled her nose as the smell of must strengthened. The wind they felt earlier dissipated and died, the scrape and splash of their footfalls echoing longer and louder than they had before. The Shalane edged closer to Jen. Deeper they walked, stepping in stagnant pools of grimy water and slipping on slick tiles. A loud wail, tortured and long, froze them where they stood. The sphere of fireflies broke and fled, leaving them blind. The Shalane reached out into pure blackness, reaching for Jen, but her hand found nothing. She stepped forward, feeling about her.
"Jen! Jen, where are you?"
Something flapped past her head and she shrieked, fear pricking her skin. She called for Jen with a softer voice, finding the wall to her right and feeling her way along it as she walked. Another moan, now closer, reverberated down the corridor, and she stopped, fearful of what she might find. Ahead of her she could make out a lightning in the gloom, and she made her way cautiously toward it. The hallway turned abruptly to the right, and she spied a large room filled with sunlight. Voices, one powerful and strong, one hoarse and sad, argued with each other. She sneaked closer for a better look, moving slowly so as not to splash in the pools of water at her feet. The room, dome-shaped and wide, rose some 50 feet into the air, where a hole twice the width of a man had been chiselled, letting in the midday sunlight. The circle of light encompassed a raised pool of water surrounded by circular benches. In the centre of the pool, the Shalane surmised a statue had once stood, but instead a figure sat upon the broken pedestal. He sobbed, his face lowered. At the edge of the pool, addressing him in an unfamiliar tongue, stood an imposing figure, cloaked to hide his features. Jen lay sprawled and unconscious on a bench nearby, and the Shalane shrank back, fearing discovery.
"Go forward, Shalane. You are not unexpected or unwelcome."
The Shalane spun. The voice was that of a woman, sonorous and strangely accented. She could just make her out as she stepped forward into the light from behind her, and the Shalane gasped, backing away from her into the room. She stood at least 8 feet tall, and was regally built, silver hair falling about her shoulders. Her ears were upswept, and her features strong and beautiful. She wore a brown cloak clasped about her waist with a silver belt fashioned with interlocking leaves. Underneath the cloak she wore a dress of forest green that set off the intense grey eyes, eyes that held no malice or treachery, but sadness and years of wisdom. The Shalane stopped.
"Who are you?"
she asked, failing to keep the trembling from her voice.
"Fear me not," she answered. "I am Sarina Kam, and I have longed for the day when I might meet you and see your face. I have longed to bring you before him."
She indicated the figure, sobbing upon the pedestal.
"He has wept for long enough. What of Jen, the man protecting me? He is asleep. Come, You will see that no harm has come to him."
Serena led the way forward, walking as a noblewoman would, straight, tall, and proud.
"Are you an elf?"
the Shalane chanced, sensing she was not.
"I am Milim Eri, an elf master and messenger for the Ulric, the gods, though we have no liege that we choose to serve."
As Serena approached the pool, the other cloaked figure removed his hood, revealing long white hair and a powerful face.
"This is Sor Kam," Serena explained, "my brother, the one who weeps as Uldamar. He was once Mikkik Dun, those like us that served Mikkik."
"Why does he weep?" the Shalane asked, finding it difficult to look anywhere but the floor.
"You will soon know. That is part of why we let you come here, why we protected you from his grief. Without our protection, you would be overcome as Jen is, and never awake without our aid. Many we rescued from this place in the ancient times. You are the first to enter here in many, many years. But Mikkik's work is at hand. Our salvation from the Dark God has come to us in human form. Salvation has come in you. Remove your veil, please."
The Shalane didn't think to disagree or disobey and lifted it from her head. She saw something spark in Sor Kam's eyes, and he and Serena stared at each other in silence for several moments before Sor turned his attention to Uldamar.
"Uldamar," he ordered, "lift up your eyes and behold the salvation of Kihol. Look!"
Uldamar did not stir and continued to cry.
"Look!"
Sor Kam thundered. Reluctantly, Uldamar lifted his head and the Shalane took a step back as the tormented gaze fell upon her. Uldamar, like the others, was noble in features, but his face exuded sorrow and pain. Tears had stained his cheeks grey and his eyes were red and ringed in shadow. At once she felt a crushing weight of spirit, a burden centuries old she could not bear. Serena stepped to her side and grasped her shoulders, the weight easing at her touch. Upon seeing her, Aldemar's eyes widened, and he glanced at Serena and Sor in surprise, before turning back, eyes settling on her.
"Show her, Uldamar. She needs to see."
Her vision wavered as Uldamar entered her mind. She could feel his pain, ancient and abiding, pressing upon her heart. In her mind's eye, a scene opened before her, and she felt as if Uldamar had spirited her away out of the room and out of time. She flew over a green field on a clear evening, yellow wildflowers starting to close with the end of day. Overhead, all three moons, Min, Duum, and Triss, waxed full and beautiful. She breathed in, her lungs filling with clean, cool air. The world was new, innocent, and wholesome in a way she had never felt before. While she couldn't say why, a sense of rightness pervaded everything, and she smiled in spite of herself. Here was peace and a reflection of a beloved creator, and finding happiness required nothing more than setting one foot before the other and reveling in the goodness that imbued the world. Every vista of mountain, tree, sky, and river exhilarated and soothed at once. Just as the grandeur invited her to a bliss she longed for, the feeling gradually changed as the fields slid by. Curious and disappointed at the change, she lifted her eyes. A throng gathered in a small depression on the plain, their dark clothing offsetting a figure brilliant and shining in the midst of them. She flew closer and stopped, hovering above them.
"Behold the throng of Mikkik, glorious Ulric of Kihol!"
Aldemar's voice quavered.
"Look, for there am I!"
The Shalane found him in the congregation, understanding that these were Mikkik Dun, Milim Eri followers of Mikkik. Aldemar stood among them, eyes worshipfully regarding his god. The Shalane studied the figure of her enemy, but she could barely perceive his shape, his brightness defeating mortal vision. In front of him, he had built a crude altar from stones, and upon it lay a sword, simple in design, such as a common soldier might use.
"It is the first weapon made upon Kihol, though what you will see is not the first time it was used. It is filled with power, for Mikkik discovered a great secret."
The Shalane wanted to inquire into what Uldamar meant, but below her, Mikkik's voice raised in a chant, and the Shalane recognized the sound and tone of those words, the same language spoken by the demon on the night of her betrothal. Though she understood that what she saw was a memory that happened hundreds of years before her birth, she felt the power of the incantation as Aldemar had, and she trembled. Each word felt of hatred, pride, ambition, and greed. Mikik stopped his ritual briefly, barking at the Mikik done around him with one harsh word. At his command, they withdrew knives from their dark robes and cut their wrists, spilling their golden blood onto the waving grass. The Shalane felt weak as one by one they slumped to the ground, all but one, who stood facing his master with doubt on his face. Aldemar. Mikik ignored him, grasping the sword and plunging it into the soil. He incanted again, and in a circle around him, the grass and flowers died, withering black and disintegrating into dust. The blood and bodies of the Mikik Dun followed, and with each passing moment, Mikik and his sword increased in luminescence and power, until the Shalane could hardly stand to look upon the scene.
"Prepare yourself, child," Aldemar warned, voice laying open his agony. "What comes now is a crime, such as Kihol has never known. But you must see. You must know why."
The Shalane felt Eldaloth before she saw him descend from the sky like a burning white star. His presence was warm and electrifying, joyful and perfect. It was he that created the beauty around her, for he was beauty, and all creation reflected his heart and connected to his soul. He outshone even Mikik, and she could scarcely lift her eyes to the luminance. Eldaloth thundered angrily at Mikik in a language she could not understand. Mikik replied by raising the sword and striking Eldaloth with it. Eldaloth yelled in agony and fell backward, his blood falling on the dead grass. Immediately the aura around Mikik and the sword died and his face registered shock. Stripped of his brilliance, Mikik shared much in appearance with the Mikik Dun. He was beautiful and strong in features, powerful in build and fierce of countenance. Upswept ears held back long, flowing golden hair, and on either side of a sharp nose, silver-grey eyes burned with power. The sword he held in his hand turned clear, where Eldaloth's blood ran along it. A reverberation filled the air, and Eldaloth died. The brightness faded, and nothing evidenced that the god had ever been there save that the ground, too, had turned to a clear stone where his blood had spilled. Only Aldemar and Mikik remained. The feeling of rightness on Kihol that had thrilled her had perished with Eldaloth, and she ached for its return as a child seeks the arms of its mother. The Shalane found herself crying with Aldemar. Mikik slaughtered perfect beauty, perfect peace, and perfect goodness before her. Not one churchman she had ever met could understand. They might preach paradise, but how could they feel its loss when all they had were vague notions and weak words to describe the abiding peace and the enduring rightness of everything that Mikik annihilated along with their creator? For the first time, she understood her own importance. If the being to be fathered within her could indeed bring a return of that world of natural joy, then every sacrifice she must make, every indignity she would suffer, and every love she had to forsake would be of little consequence. Below her in the clearing, Aldemar sunk to his knees and wept. And nature wept with him. Clouds gathered, the ground shook, and even the plants drooped and wilted. Mikik gaped at the sword and examined himself, perhaps surprised at his loss of glory. A violent, wrenching crack split the ground in two at the point where Eldaloth had fallen, the earth collapsing into a deep gorge. Mikik and Aldemar fell inside, and the vision faded. The Shalane wiped her eyes as the room came into focus. Aldemar smiled sadly at her, face and shoulders relieved of their burdens. Sor and Serena stood behind her, watching Aldemar and witnessing the fulfillment of something they had worked on for years uncounted.
"You do not understand it all, Shalane," Aldemar rasped. "You know my folly, but not the folly and curse of my people. A burden we yet bear and will yet atone for. But understand that it is your destiny to undo one part of what was done that day. Though perhaps not in a way you will understand."
Aldemar turned his gaze to Sor
and Sarina, bowing to them and speaking to them in their own tongue, though the Shalane could discern the gratitude in Aldemar's voice. Sarina approached.
Shalane, we thank you for this service. We have long grieved for Aldemar and his sadness, for while he did stand and watch Eldeloth die, he had at least the courage and the wisdom to disobey his master when the call came. He was Mikik done, but now he is our brother and our ally. For your service, Shalane, we would give you a gift, if you would receive it.
Sarina removed a small stone of molten glass from her cloak and extended it to the Shalane.
Take it.
The Shalane carefully lifted and examined the stone, eyes widening at a flickering light within it.
I thank you, but what is it for? What am I to do with it? It concerns the second gift we will give you. Tell me, if you could kill the Ilk, would you do it?
Yes, of course, the Shalane answered without hesitation.
That is our gift. That stone is his animon, his life, Sarina said. He lies there by the fountain, unconscious. You can slay him without fear. Just cast the stone to the ground, and it will break like glass and finish him.
The Shalane looked toward the fountain, seeing only Jen upon the ground.
Where is the Ilk? She asked. He is there, Sarina indicated, pointing toward Jen's body. He is the Ilk. Kill him and rid yourself of your enemy and your fear.
The Shalane trembled, disbelief furrowing her brow.
He is not the Ilk, she objected.
She knew he was an orphan. She knew he was near the same age as she and Shatan.
It's impossible. He's protected me, almost died for me. He loves me. He cannot be the Ilk. He is one of the most noble and decent people I have ever met.
Sarina took her hand, leading her to where Jen lay breathing shallowly. Sorkam removed the boot from Jen's scarred left foot.
We burned his foot to obscure the mark.
Sor placed his hand on the instep of Jen's left foot, and after several moments the scars faded, leaving in their place a perfect circle, the unveiled moon of Triss. The Shalane sat hard upon the stone bench behind her, mind reeling.
It cannot be. Why did you do this? What have you done? We have deprived Mikik of his tool, Sarina answered. We have weakened Mikik and strengthened your cause. We took Jen from the caretaker Mikik chose for him. He was but a child, uncorrupted and innocent. We did not expect that he would ever come to your personal service, but we hoped he would be of some use to you and the world, for he will be powerful one day. We wanted to keep him secluded until Triss was unveiled, at which point we were to teach him or destroy him if he refused. But other forces have shifted our plans. He has grown to fame and importance and has served you well, for which we are gratified. But, Shalane, we give him to you to do with as you please. He was to be your enemy. You can kill him or spare him at your whim.
How could I kill him? The Shalane groaned, head pounding and stomach clenching.
How could I murder him after everything he's done? Who am I to decide, and who are you that you can give him and take him as you please?
Sarina frowned.
The prophecy says he will rend you unless he is killed first. I give you the chance to turn the prophecy to your favor. He is Mikik's creature. Can you live in peace, knowing he is alive and watching over you while you sleep?
The Shalane shook her head, tears coming freely now.
He could never hurt me. You care for him? Sarina asked.
Yes, the Shalane answered softly. Sarina's face darkened, and she and her brother shared a meaningful look.
Then you will not kill him, Sarina stated. Take comfort, dear. It seems my brother and I have done our work too well. Keep his animon so that you may protect yourself from him if you need to, but guard it well. Will you still walk with him? We can keep him here if you wish.
I want him with me, the Shalane declared resolutely, a sudden understanding coming to her.
I have no need to kill the Ilk. You have done it for me. He is Jen, my protector. He has done more in my service than any other man, and if there ever came a day when he would feel to destroy me, then I doubt I would have much reason to live.
Sor and Serena stared at her for many moments, but their confident, noble demeanour had changed to one of doubt, and even a little fear. Aldemar, who watched silently, spoke words in the tongue of the Milim Eri, and Sor and Serena nodded their agreement.
"What did you say?"
she asked, annoyed that they were hiding things from her.
"I apologize, Shalane,"
Aldemar soothed.
"I will simply say that our people have brought trouble to Keyhall by meddling before."
"That you care for this man troubles us,"
Sor confessed.
"For if you care for Jen, can you still love the Haulric? Would he love you?"
The Shalane's face scrunched with displeasure.
"Have you meddled so much, and yet know nothing of Shatan?"
she answered, feeling upset and ill-used.
"It is beyond reason to think anyone as indecent as he is could love anyone other than himself, or that anyone decent could ever love anyone like him."
Serena frowned.
"We have known of his character, and it grieves us. He was hidden away from our watch and our influence until recently. We have hoped, however, that hardship would turn him from his selfishness and set him on the path of his duty. Much depends on him."
"Yes, much. I too hope he would change, but I cannot see that he will. How shall we win on the field that day if Shatan remains as he is, weak and selfish?"
"You are the healer," Serena offered. "Perhaps your greatest challenge will be to work your arts on a diseased soul."
"I have no power over men's souls to heal or help them," the Shalane argued, "and time is short to change such a wayward heart. I think your meddling will come to naught. It would have been better for Jen to have killed me than for Shatan and I to march headlong into failure. What am I to do?"
Aldemar stepped forward and placed his hands on her shoulders, locking her gaze to his.
"Your child must be born. There is hope there, no matter how despicable Shatan may be to you now."
Despair flooded the Shalane's heart.
"Then lend me strength to do what I must, if it is in your power to give it."
"I can only give you this,"
Aldemar whispered.
"Here is wisdom. Never do in duty's name what cannot be done in love. If you but obey this one thing, then nothing more is required of you to do your part. It is what Eldaloth taught. It is all that he would have you do. Remember it well."
Aldemar turned to his companions.
"Sor, take Jen, and I shall convey the Shalane."
Before the Shalane could ask one of 100 questions, Aldemar flourished his robe around her, and she remembered no more.